I certainly learned one thing today. Never follow a large chocolate chip cookie. I think it's kind of tough to getting folks in here. So I think everybody's out there. Well, first off, I wanted to thank you all for coming today. And it's always a pleasure. And I know a lot of folks out here have been very much involved. I look at it, I see a number of faces of folks that were involved in the H1N1 response and the success that we had with that. So what today I'd like to do is talk to you a little bit about our media monitoring, why we do it, what's kind of special about it, and some progress that we've made in terms of what we used to have for our old automated system. So I want to talk to you a little bit about why do we do searches in terms of doing this, and I think what I would say is that for most of our searches, this is our first step in our qualitative research. We want to know what's being said out there. And then also talk a little bit about our system. We have a system called AutoInform. It's a system we built in-house with some help from a company called Linguistat and also some people up at Oak Ridge National Labs. And then also talk a little bit about our current and future applications for this in terms of what's monitoring, and then show you a little bit of the findings that we found from H1N1. It's going to be a little bit different because I know in a lot of the presentations what people do is they look at, you know, here are what we do to put the blogs out, here are the tweets that we put out, this is the message. This is a little bit different perspective. What we're doing is we're looking and seeing what everybody else's blogs, tweets, and news says, and then how does that affect what we say. So it really does help us in terms of shaping what our messages are. Why perform media message monitoring? You can see what's up there. I think one of the things that struck me the most about when we started doing H1N1 monitoring was is that on April 21st last year, I don't think anybody really in this country, well, a handful of folks knew what H1N1 really was in terms of influenza. They learned very quickly. They learned very quickly from the media. So, you know, as you take a look at what's out there and what's being taught to folks and what do they know, you know, most of it's coming from the media. The other thing is that you want to take a look at in terms of, you know, what are your intended consequences in terms of what you're saying out there in terms of your messages and what are the unintended consequences. I think we shared kind of the same fate as the USDA and some of the farmers in Iowa with the name swine flu because, you know, for the farmers, swine flu suddenly became a problem that was affecting from pigs. You get the flu from the pigs so no one would eat pigs or would eat any pork products. For us, the thing that happened was that I think it was, you know, we came out with the first reports on April 21st, and then on April 23rd, there was a whole slurry of stories about the 1976 swine flu episode at Fort Dix and the safety problems that came out of that. So even before we had a vaccine safety problem. It was kind of unique, you know, the first time it's ever happened to me. And, you know, so it gives you an idea in terms of why you do things in terms of media monitoring. It gives you an idea of some of the issues that are out there. With our system AutoInform, we use an automated system. This is a system that uses a platform. To give you an idea, it's an automated platform. We use semantic linguistic analysis. It's a platform built by a company by the name of Linguistat. Linguistat is actually four guys in the Bay Area of California, the same place that Microsoft did. Microsoft did all their work in a garage. These guys didn't even have a garage. They did it all on the phone. And so we had high expectations for them. And what they did was they built an intelligence platform that actually goes out and reads the news for you, categorizes it and pulls it together so that you're able to take a look at large amounts of data. Give you a rough idea about that, we are one of the few places that analyzes tweets. It's because there's 55 million tweets a day. You know, that'll keep a few people busy doing reading that stuff. We are actually able to use semantic linguistic analysis and cut right through that down to, and I'll give you the figures in terms of what happens with that. We're able to scan a number of newspaper articles. There's about 1,422 newspapers in the country, so you can see that we were able to go through a lot of stuff that's out there. Most of them have an online version. That's what we use. We also use a couple of other sources for the information. And the system basically does a lot of coding. This is the same platform that you would see used in a number of intelligence applications for different organizations that also start with a C. AutoInform, basically with our system, what we do is we basically go through, we take raw information, and for our purposes we have, you'll see right here what we go through is news, blogs, Twitter, websites, and publishers, and do that. System's also set up that you could do other things in terms of doing that. I think part of the issue I have with that is, and you're going to begin seeing folks searching Facebook and all the stuff that's there. Be careful what I put out there. It's really very easy to pull this stuff up, and I'll show you in a little bit how easy it is. What we do is we use the semantic linguistic platform with Linguistat, reproduce a series of trends, reports, maps, and discovery functions, and I'll show those to you in just a little bit in terms of what's out there. The idea of what we're trying to do is we're trying to take roughly somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think on an average day, we did something like 48,000. We started growing as time went on. Stories that are out there that go through our search engines that we filter down and then put that through and able to analyze that and put that into some kind of form that you can use. So we decided, you know, what's the best way of doing that so somebody like Chris in 10 minutes can take a look at that and see what's really going on. Some of the ways that we report out the data is we report geospatial mapping. Out there we use, actually work the guys that did the Google Bubbles. It was one of the four guys that worked with Linguistat, so we're able to do that. We're actually, and I'm going to show you this and talk a little bit about the features of this because this stuff is all available to you. And you can use it, you know, in terms of vaccine safety or H1N1 or influenza issues that are there. You can actually click on any of those bubbles and it'll actually open up the stories that are there. The other thing that we do is that we look for semantic analysis. One of the things we do is that we have a series of messages or phrases that talks about what's being said in the story. If it deals with a concern about vaccine safety, we have a linguistic string set up so that it asks a series of questions that the machine can look at and answer and say that, you know, there's concerns about vaccine safety for thimerosal, say in this particular issue, it'll report out the number of times that are there. So you get a frequency in terms of what are the messages. The nice thing about this system is you always worry, do you know enough when you're doing a large database? What happens with this is it has a discovery function where it actually goes through and processes everything all together and looks for new arrangements, new arrays in terms of what are the messages that are out there and report them back out to you. That's what you're seeing with this. And then the other thing we do is that some of you may have seen this before, tag clouds. What we really do there is look for what are the word elements that are reported out in terms of the most in terms of the stories. And we do this on a daily basis, so it gives you a really good idea in terms of what's being said out there in terms of the common word elements. Again, that gives you the clues in terms of what's going on. A couple of things we did with this. One is that we looked at all the press conferences that was done by Dr. Besser, and we were looking at, this time we were looking at, you know, what's the difference between H1N1 and swine flu? Well, we thought, are we doing something wrong in terms of, you know, the press keeps using the term swine flu, we want them to use the term H1N1. Well, we found out when we asked the press conferences, everybody used the term H1N1. When they turned around and wrote their articles, they all used the term swine flu. So it was something in the media, there really wasn't a whole lot we were able to do about that, and finally we're able to convince USDA about that. So we're able to do the tag clouds on a daily basis. This is the part that you would see reported out. We have a dashboard that's available for you. You can actually click on any one of those bubbles, again, pull up the stories, it expands. It also has in there all the messages that are there, so you can take a look and kind of analyze what the data is. We also calculate what's called a metascore. Metascore is kind of it's based on Bayesian theory in terms of dispersal, and I really don't understand this. We have a PhD statistician that does this stuff, and it just sounds good to me. I mean, I have trouble making my checkbook balance. And so what we do is that what we're really looking on metascore is we're looking for the reach for a combination of both websites and also for press stories. So what we'll do is we'll collect impressions that are out there, but we'll also collect in terms of the number of reach per million hits, the number of times somebody will come to that website. So it gives us a really good idea in terms of, you know, a particular website. One of the things that we dealt with a lot at CDC was that, you know, oh my God, we go through the blog reports and there were six websites out there that said something nasty about CDC and you begin thinking the world's against you. Well, one of the things we found out, and I'll show you in just a little bit, is that I think all six of those people all talk to themselves. There really aren't all that many people that are out there against you. They have very low readership. So just because you've got a negative blog site doesn't mean there's anything you should really pay a lot of attention to. So I think reach is an important thing. This is our first way of doing it. It's based on, for the websites, we use the Amazon.com Alexa system. There's a lot of debate as to which one works the best with websites, but we just went with Alexa as our first attempt to do this in terms of measuring combination reach. So we calculate as a metascore. So metascore really for our purposes, as you're going to see forward, is the higher the number for metascore, the more the reach there is. We also calculate not just stories and websites, but what are the messages across, all those websites, what are the messages that are in the stories across that, and then how often and commonly are those seen. And I'll show you what were the top messages right now in terms of period April 15 through January 31. We went back from the 21st just to get kind of a baseline in terms of what were the stories. One of the things that was really fascinating to us is that you can take a look at the different sources. The blue up there is the news in terms of the counts that are there, in terms of the number of stories. And what you see on the news was the number of cases was really very important. And is Glenn still here? He move on. Glenn was right. He predicted the number one thing when we got into this, when we were doing some of the planning, would be the number of stories was the major thing. They were looking for any way they could in terms of quantifying the information was out there. The number two thing in news was, you know, that this disease basically affects people with underlying conditions. That, you know, initially that was a great message because during the time period April to maybe June, there was a lot of high anxiety and a lot of concern about this particular disease. As time went on, we came out with a vaccine. And one of the really interesting things, and Jim may be able to talk about this, was that people really weren't too terribly concerned about this particular disease because it involved people with underlying conditions. I hope you say that today so I don't look like a liar, but we'll see what happens. Okay, he promises he'll say it. For blogs, you know, we took a look at that in terms of the number one issue, again, was cases reported, but what was the economic impact? And one of the things for blogs is that, you know, and we'll show this in just a little bit, they tend to go in a lot more detail, so they really explain things. So if you're really looking at this in terms of how do you use blogs in the future, I think the thing is that do your quick news bites, do your stories out there, but then do your detail in your blogs and do that. One of the things that I think worked really well with this particular H1N1 season was there was a lot of kind of forecasting in terms of what was going to happen, the foreshadowing. We tried to lead folks in terms of, you know, this is probably going to happen in the future. You can anticipate that there's going to be a number of deaths. You can anticipate that a number of things are going to happen. So we tried to, with Dr. Besser, you know, as time went on, to try and lead folks in terms of what may happen to prepare them just in case that it did. And so, you know, one of the things is that as you do that, I think blogs is going to be a really nice source to go ahead and do that. Twitter. You know, Twitter was sensational. I mean, what that was, it was all about the number of deaths. That was the number one thing. Anytime there's a case reported anywhere in a city, I mean, the tweets just went crazy in that particular city. I mean, they reported that stuff. It was really great because for us, in terms of surveillance, all of a sudden we knew that there was cases at Shepherd Air Force Base before the Air Force even knew that there were cases at Shepherd Air Force Base because somebody was tweeting about that. One thing I would encourage you to do, too, is that as you do this, be really careful on Twitter, because I think there really are some safety concerns. Somebody was tweeting from the Texas Vaccine Laboratory Depository about, hey, we got the new H1N1 vaccine in, and gee, isn't it great that we've got it here because there's all these troopers guarding it. You know, there's a series of things going on. If you were really looking to get the vaccine, you suddenly were told where to go get it. So, you know, be careful in terms of what you put out there with that. Well, you know, we've talked a little bit about what's there and why and what's going on. Well, why is this so important? I think one of the things that's really happened is over the last few years, the internet has become one of the dominant sources. It ranks just behind TV in terms of communications. This is not a new study that was just done by the Pew Research Center that looked at terms of this. The other thing that happens is more than half the people are using more than one source in terms of what's there. And on a typical day, 99% of the people say they get their information from at least one news source. And people tend to look for, you know, what's there and what's conflicting in terms of the news sources. And again, why is this important? Well, one of the really interesting things, and I think we've all seen this with vaccine safety, is it doesn't matter whether it's true or not. You just say it enough and all of a sudden it takes it on, the illusion of being truth. This is the Edelman barometer right here. It talks about 60% of the people. They hear something from different sources 3 to 5 times in terms of what's out there. They tend to believe that it's true. So, you know, keep in mind, especially with this, it's very easy for a number of sources, especially from friends, to do that. A couple of things in terms of results we saw early on with this, and I really haven't had much of a chance to get in to do this. Twitter seems to be very reactionary to what's in the news. So what happens is people, you know, read something in a newspaper story. What happens is that they tend to follow it in the news, they tend to react to it, and they react to it using Twitter. So if you're looking at kind of a social barometer in terms of what's going on there, Twitter sometimes will give you very good information. The other thing is to talk about this is the blogs as they remain relatively constant. One of the things I would encourage you to do is, especially if any of you are involved in emergency planning, is go out and find the folks that do the blog writing in your particular area and bring them in and kind of brief them early on in terms of what you're doing. I think much in the way that we, same way that we do things with, we do press briefings and we do the kind of the media roundtables. I think if we did the kind of the blogger roundtables, it would do really well. You can see that the number of blogs really didn't go up and down all that much. It was relatively constant, and the reason I believe that is that, you know, we really didn't change that much in terms of the number of bloggers. The other thing that is really interesting with this is, for those of you that have websites, if anything appears in terms of a news message, you know, it'll be there forever. One of the really fascinating things with this was is that how many people have been in vaccination over 5 years? Would you put your hands up? Okay, a few folks. Remember Simpson Wood? That clandestine secret meeting we had in the woods at Simpson Wood, you know, on vaccines on Mercury?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's really a hard place to find. You just got to follow the green signs. And if you want to go visit it, you can find it today. The DOT signs. But anyway, what happened is that came up over and over and over again, even in H1N1. So certain issues were always there. They never go away. You always get them retweeted right back at you. Robert Kennedy's reports that he had was one of those things that the same thing happened. How much time do I have left?
You're done.
I'm done.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'll try and wrap up then. The other thing is that the tweets, as we went back and looked at those, they often focus on the negative. Again, what they do is that you will find that folks, that when they retweet this stuff, it all tends to focus on the negative. This is where you begin seeing a lot of the stuff on Simpson Wood. On any kind of negative article that's out there, you'll begin seeing a lot of stuff pushed around again and again and again in terms of tweeting. And one of the other things that we did was that we often do scatter charts, and you can see based on what we have, there's kind of a linear relationship in terms of what the metascore is and the count and number of times it show up. And what we do is we kind of look for what are the things that are kind of outside of that kind of linear relationship. We saw this when we ran vaccine safety. We saw there were certain negative things that popped up. For us, the thing that got the most attention for us was, you know, that seemed to be above the norm, which was a very short period of time. I had a lot of tweets, but got a lot of direction was when we talked about vaccines. So that's kind of a good sign for us on this particular one, as opposed to what we've had before. And with that, I will go ahead and end it up, wrap it up, and turn it back to Chris.